The topic tonight is singleness and sexuality. What we're going to be doing a little bit of is doing some sharing in small groupings. I would suggest groupings of 3 and 4, really quick groupings, because I want to get some stuff up on the board, but I don't want to ask for feedback immediately from everyone. So for 2 or 3 minutes, I want you to get into a small group. But I want to explain what I'd like to see happen first. Singleness and sexuality, we already went over singleness, all the varieties of that. But sexuality, when we talk about sexuality, what are we talking about?
Our very being.
Our very being. Okay, and that includes what?
Sex.
It includes the expressions of physical, genital, sex. Sure. What else does sexuality include?
Sensuality.
Sensuality, okay.
Mentality.
What else does it include?
Gender.
Gender, how we see ourselves as males or females. What else does it include? And how society sees us as male and female as well, not just how we see ourselves. Yes.
How we relate to our own gender and the other gender.
Okay. How we relate to our own gender and the other gender. What else does sexuality include?
Intimacy.
Okay, intimacy is an important part of sexuality. Sexuality also includes issues of orientation, who we are attracted to in terms of sharing our intimacies, not just physical genital intimacy, but intimacy in all other areas of our lives as well. So, the first part of what I want to do tonight is try to figure out what messages we've gotten as we've grown up about this whole idea of singleness and sexuality. And by messages, I'm talking about the messages we've received from the church, the messages we've received from society, the messages we've received from our families, our parents, our siblings, our friends, and from inside ourselves. What messages have we grown up with around singleness and sexuality? And the reason I want you to get into groups of 3 and 4 for 2 or 3 minutes to do that is that I don't want to get a whole bunch of messages on the board without giving you first a chance to try to find some commonalities. In other words, I'd like each group of 3 or 4 to try to narrow it down to 3 or 4 major messages so that by the time you're done with those 2 or 3 minutes of discussion, we've only got maybe 10 messages on the board rather than 50. Okay, does that make sense? Is everybody comfortable with that, or would you rather just call them up?
Just call them up.
The reason I'm suggesting small groups is that I know that we have some introverts in this room who don't feel comfortable calling things out. Introverts make up about 25% of the population, and extroverts about 75%. So in a group this size, we can pretty much guess that 3/4 of this group is extrovert and feels real comfortable with shouting it out. But that means about 1/4 of the group doesn't get to participate very easily. So, can we, I don't know, I'm flexible and willing to go either way. So somebody that really wants to move into small groups, put your hand up if you do. What else? What other messages?
Stay a virgin.
Stay a virgin? Until when?
I think we're showing our age.
Until you get married.
Until you get married. Okay, what else?
You know, Billy Graham says you can't have perfect sex unless you are married.
Okay, so...
Well, I don't know what...
Perfect sex is within marriage?
Yes, I guess that's what he's saying.
Perfect sex.
Is that much?
I don't think I've ever heard of perfect sex.
Sherry, are these messages as you grow up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Messages that you've grown up with, either through the church, through your family, friends, school, wherever, your environment. Just the messages that you have lived with as you've been growing up.
Information was usually learned from friends rather than within the family.
Friends or older sisters or brothers.
Okay, so the, what messages in that, if you could only hear things from friends or sisters and brothers, what message did that give you about the nature of sex? Sexuality.
There's something wrong with it because you have to hide it.
Okay.
The no-no.
Sexuality must remain hidden.
Well, I'd say among friends, though, among male friends, it was, you know, if you didn't have an active sexual life, you weren't a male.
Well, especially if you got to a certain age,
yeah.
Your sexuality or your orientation becomes questioned.
Okay, so
I don't know how you put that.
So it's a rite of passage.
So sex is a rite of passage for both men and women, for both males and females. Is that it? No. What is it then?
For men, it is.
For men, sex is a rite of passage. Is that a message that we've grown up with?
Males don't have a gender identity.
Okay, so how would you say that?
That complicated?
That's...
Well, part of becoming a man is being sexually active, mm-hmm. is included in the establishment of gender identity.
Are you good?
Okay, so
to be... There was just expectations of
to become
participation
a man,
for men.
To become a man, one must be sexually active. Is that the message you've gotten as men? To become a man.
Well, at least talk as if you were.
Yeah.
Okay.
You are.
To become a man, one must be sexually... sexually talkative, okay.
There you go.
That's a good one.
That is good.
That's a good one, okay. And at least pretend that you're sexually active. Yeah.
We didn't discuss it in the group, but sexuality was always associated with filthy language, and filthy language with sexuality, with sex.
Sex.
Okay. So sex.
When guys get together and tell dirty jokes or use smutty language, it usually involves sex.
Sex. Okay. So dirty jokes equals sex. Is that?
Sex equals
sex equals dirty jokes.
Dirty language is filled with sex.
Dirty language is filled with sex. Okay. Dirty language is filled with sex.
Sexual language is filled with sex.
Yeah.
Or
sexual language is filled with filth or dirt or whatever.
Or dirty language is body function.
We're gonna spend so much time on semantics that we're not gonna have any time to do anything.
Okay.
I did not mean that. How that came out.
Okay.
There's a double standard.
Okay. What's the double standard?
Okay for guys, not for women.
Sex is okay for guys and not for women.
Yeah.
Okay.
Men want to marry virgins.
Okay.
Yeah, men could talk about how good she was.
And could women talk about that?
No.
Mm-hmm. And what keeps women from talking like that?
Well, you're supposed to be sweet and shy and ignorant.
Okay.
Otherwise, you are a loose woman.
Right.
Judgmental.
Okay. Have the messages changed now, today?
Yes.
Okay. What are the messages right now?
Sherry. I teach sex ed in a small school system in Montana as part of my school nurse job with fifth and sixth graders, and I have parents come off the wall because we do sex ed in the school. They feel like we don't need to tell the kids those things. They say you're teaching the children to masturbate. That's what they'll say. And they're, you know, I don't think the kids need to know that. That's too young. Fifth and sixth grade is too young to have that information. I don't know that it's changed all that much.
Okay, so Jerry, you think that the messages haven't changed so much. Are there others who think that the messages have changed? I saw some heads shaking before that the messages have changed.
I think the reality has changed. I'm not sure the messages have. But the reality has changed. I mean, there are many young singles living together now.
There's a lot of teenage pregnancies, period.
Yeah.
Look at the media.
More
look
so.
Look at what's shown on TV. Look at the language. Look at the explicit sex in movies and on TV.
Okay. But what I hear you saying is that the experience has changed, but the messages are the same as we have on the board. Sex is wrong or sex is bad, and there's still a double standard for men and women. Is that right?
No.
No. Okay. Then tell me what the standard is for men and women.
If it feels good, do it.
I don't think so. I think that is correct, especially in the Christian church, because I was a minister's daughter and I was brought up that the ultimate aim of a woman was to be this shy, naive person that was to be married. If you're single, you're a little bit on abnormal ground. And for men, they're more freer.
And was it also seen as more appropriate for a man to gain experience? I don't know. I think that's part of the double standard, that men are seen and held in esteem if they have more experience.
Held in esteem by whom, though?
I don't know.
Other guys or women?
This is the messages I think that we sort of live with.
I think what you're confusing here for me is there's a church context to talk about it. For men and women, that is often not that different. And then there's an unchurched way of talking about it.
Okay.
It is very different.
And in this context, I think part of what we want to do is talk about some of the church context that we have in terms of our singleness and sexuality, and some of the struggles we have with our sexuality because of our church or faith tradition, and also what are some of the ways that we can make some of those messages different so that there's some answers to some of our struggles. Okay? What are some of the questions that you're coming with? Some of the hopes that you have had about this particular discussion tonight? Yes.
Well, I think I've expressed my feelings about being accepted on a variety of levels, intellectual, artistic, you know, not just this focus on seduction and sex. You know, I'm a being with all kinds of interests and
that's
feelings,
right.
And that's how I want to be perceived.
Okay.
I'm not out there marketing my body.
Okay. So what you're saying is that you want to see sexuality discussed in as broad a form as possible, and not limit it to sexual expression. which is sort of what the messages that you've come up with are about, is that sexual expression piece.
But that was when we were supposed to be growing up that it came up like that. I mean, many people in this room have been married previously, and because some of the mores have changed and they're more open about things, it doesn't mean that everybody's just out there having casual sex at every opportunity. But it would be hard to believe, perhaps, that if you were going into another relationship and it became a serious relationship, that you would say, well, I must wait until I get married to, you know, have a more intimate aspect of your relationship, and it would probably not be, that would not be wrong.
Okay.
You can't go back and make yourself something over, and I'm not even sure that it was a good idea the first time.
Okay. Now that's making an assumption also that that those folks who are single may be heading for a marriage.
They may or they may not.
Yeah. Okay.
And if they were to have a significant other, which is a common term, or, you know, a long-term relationship, maybe they would not. There are people who sometimes get into age brackets where they don't want to let go of their Social Security, and they may be together and they may do things together, be companions together, have sex together, and decide not to get married because it isn't practical, mm-hmm. of all things.
Okay. And let's throw it out to the rest of the group then. Is there agreement to this way of looking at things, or are there additional struggles with that, particularly because of the stance of the church? What kinds of struggles do we as single adults have, even if we have been married, divorced or widowed, and single again, or if we've always been single? What are the struggles that we have with sexuality?
Morality.
Morality.
I struggle with the idea that the church teaches me that we live by the Spirit and not by a set of rules. But in this area, the church seems determined to set down an absolute, a rule, a morality for all its people, including married people, setting down morality for single people.
Well, including men telling women. I mean, for years the church was a patriarch, and so that's how it was determined. And that's where the double standard comes from. So it's very difficult, you know, to continue in that vein. And now that we're changing a little bit, you know, there's some more openness.
Okay. Do all of you experience more openness in the church now that the patriarchy is beginning to shift a bit?
No, I think it's still a little bit.
I think I'm wrong. I don't think that it's, and I think we've maybe touched on this before, is that, you know, it might not be coming from the pulpit that way, but in practical experience, you know, now among friends and people that know each other, I just, to me, the message is coming across, you know, from my friends and the people that I associate with, is being now single at a much older age, is that, God didn't create men and women to be by themselves all their lives. And sex is a wonderful part of life. And it's not meant to be kept, you know, forever and not utilized. I mean, our bodies are us. That's part of us.
Okay. And does the church teach us that?
Oh, no.
The other thing is that what we taught our daughters, or would teach our daughters right now, too. You know, if you have a 17 or 18 or 19 year old daughter who comes and says, hey, I want to live with this gentleman, I guess I'm inclined to talk to my kids too about the commitment and the other aspects of a relationship over and above just the sexuality. And encouraging, not just, you know, and then I guess if I say I have a standard for my daughter and want her to be protected and to not give
to become intimate sexually with someone who doesn't really feel like making other commitments to her, then maybe I'm still considering what kind of an example I'm going to set for her if I am involved in relationships that don't involve some sort of real strong sense of commitment, whether it's with, as you say, benefit of clergy or not.
So you would still have some standards that you would pass on to your daughters. I didn't hear you saying that would be true for your sons, too.
Good point. Good point. Good okay.
Point.
Yes. I have a son and a daughter. My daughter's not.
Okay, maybe that's part of it. Go ahead.
I have a son and a daughter, both.
Yeah.
And I've always taught my son more or less the same as what I told my daughter. He has responsibility as well as she does.
Okay. What does that mean for yourselves, those of you in this room that are single and struggling with that? Are some of you struggling with sexuality issues, or do all of you feel real comfortable with the decisions that you've made about your sexuality? I'm asking because I'm not...
The statistics have helped us right along. I mean, I don't know.
You know, I guess I've been in a position where I've lived in for 2 years and then sort of discussed things and renewed things like every 6 months. And my son right now is breaking up with his girlfriend after 4 years. He's 25 and they lived together for 2 years. And we had a lot of discussion and conversation about it without any judgment. You know, I'm offering you this information, which is confidential. But based on the fact that he is a man, I said, when you live with someone, it's almost the same as making the statement of a marriage to that person without the legal documents that bind you to a commitment of real responsibility to that person. And also vice versa. That's risky business. The other risk is communicable disease.
Okay.
You know, someone else can do it. You know, I'm not, I really, whatever someone is doing, that's their business. For me personally, my best feelings and proper behavior comes out. I mean, I become more fulfilled and happy in a friendship basis, not relating to sex at all. I mean, I don't have any doubt in my mind that that is an excellent part of life.
Okay, so for
but
some...
it's not necessary to be completely fulfilled.
Okay.
There's other levels of higher quality.
For some, celibacy may be a choice. And that's an okay choice to make. In the church, there are some rules in some churches about celibacy, which doesn't necessarily make it a choice.
Sherry, have you heard the term secondary virginity?
No.
That's a term that's really coming out a lot now, and when I talk with kids in high school, like you were talking about, adolescent girls and stuff, a lot of them who have made a choice to become sexually active, and it hasn't been a happy choice for them either, pregnancy-wise, or they're just not completing their developmental path, they're not getting on, their relationship just stops at that level, it doesn't grow, like you say. You don't have a chance to develop the relationship because they get into a sexual one. So we talk about abstinence as a form of birth control in the high schools and say that this is a choice. You know, you can make this choice for you. And then the ones say, well, what about me? What about me? I've already been sexually active for a year or 2 years. I've had a baby, whatever. Then we talk about secondary virginity, which says you can make a choice to become a virgin again. Probably in the eyes of God, it's a Christian concept. So I don't bring that part into the school. I'm not allowed to. But the material I got was a Christian concept. And it said you can make this choice that you will remain in this position until you are in a better relationship, a loving relationship, a more permanent relationship, so that you're not having all these negative feelings about yourself. Because they always said, choice. We are not animals.
we can go out there and say, this is getting in the way of my studies, my grades, my family relationship, you know, my depth of relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so
I think that gives a way out for those who have already kind of gone in the deep end. It gives them a way to, okay, to back off and say, I'm going to put this on the back burner until I get my other things.
Okay, so there is some choice making involved there for those who choose not to be sexually active for the moment. What about for those who choose to be sexually active but don't have a partner with whom to be a long-term, perhaps marriage partner? What then?
Yeah, big guilt trip.
Okay, so if you choose to be sexually active without a marriage or a whatever kind of a committed relationship you find acceptable, you feel guilty. Mm-hmm. What messages do you need to receive in order to deal with some of these struggles? What would help? What kind of messages from our society, from the church, what would help in the struggles that some of you, some of us? I also, by the way, am a single adult.
I think it would have the church spoke in terms of relationship rather than in terms of a legal contract. Mm-hmm. We assume if they're legally married, it's okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm suggesting it may be very un-okay in a legal marriage.
Okay,
it may be okay for some outside a legal marriage.
Okay. Did any of you read in the newspaper a couple of days ago what the Presbyterians decided when they voted on their task force's recommendation? Anybody want to share what they read? Does everybody know the context? The Presbyterian Church, as well as the ELCA and a number of other denominations, have been embarking on some pretty intense studies on this whole area of human sexuality, particularly as it relates to folks that normally haven't been covered in social statements, because marriage has been seen as the only context within which sexual expression can occur. But the major mainline denominations have been struggling with this issue in their denominational structure. And the Presbyterians went through a long process, and they came out with a report, and it was just voted on a few days ago. And I read here in the paper just a couple of days ago what was decided in their, what is it called? Is it an assembly or convention or whatever the grouping is called? The national gathering, whatever it is. General Assembly. And the report had said that they found that marriage was not the only context within which sexual expression could occur, that there was also some support for homosexual unions, and also some support for expression by single adults, responsible sexual decision making. The report was rejected 534-31 by the Presbyterian General Assembly. I think that really has some implications.
Who was on the board?
Pardon?
Who was sitting on the board, though, all married people?
No. Well, this was the gathering of the national gathering, and I don't know how they send their representatives in the Presbyterian Church. I do know that in the ELCA, we're going through a similar process. I sit on the Human Sexuality Task Force as a staff person, And I know that our process means that we'll be coming out with a study document this fall, and by 1993 we are to have a report to present, or a social statement to present to our churchwide assembly, upon which there will be a vote, just as they did with the Presbyterian Church. And at that point, our churchwide assembly is made up of both lay and clergy, both single and married. It's hard to tell who will actually be there, be nominated to go as delegates to the churchwide assembly, but we do know that it has to be a balance, at least between lay and clergy. They don't have a designation about married and single. So, you know, we don't know that. But as was pointed out before, some of the decisions will be made in terms of what the church sees as appropriate or not appropriate. And even though we thought that with the Presbyterian report there may be some opening up, what happened was they, as well as rejecting the report, sent back some sort of message to their judicatories to reaffirm the prior social statements that limited sexual expression to the context of marriage and reaffirmed homosexuality as wrong, so that we know from that vote that's sort of the general feeling from the grassroots, at least the elected grassroots that end up at those decision-making places. So I'm not sure that it's changed a lot. It doesn't seem like the church's message is changing, even though society's message may be changing somewhat. Yes?
I'm speaking as a secondary Puritan.
Okay.
I don't personally believe that the church's message about sex outside of marriage is based on the concept of a legal document.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more deeply rooted in protection of both people. And let me explain. I think it's very difficult to know the level of commitment that another individual might or might not have to relationship by what they say to you. Because my experience has been that men will say almost anything to you in order to get into bed. And they will lie either unconsciously or consciously in order to do that. So I think that the marital relationship, by being the public statement that it is, that it's a statement of a lifelong commitment, I think to a certain extent adds security to a relationship and makes, maybe not in all ways, but it makes it more likely that one individual will not be manipulating another individual. And I think that's really the basis for the prohibition against sex outside of marriage, is to be helpful to people and to protect them in their adult relationships rather than to limit them.
Okay, so protection may be one of the reasons for limiting sex to the context of marriage. Okay, what about for the approximately 10% of our population who, for whom marriage is not necessarily an option because of the orientation? About 90% of our population is heterosexual, about 10% is homosexual. Because we don't have that kind of context, does that mean then that homosexual folk must be abstinent? That there is no way of sexual expression in a partnership? Is that what you know, I'm not trying to take a position, I'm just trying to stimulate the discussion here.
But well, in Sherry, churches, they don't recognize homosexuals.
That, in some churches, that's true, yes.
Don't you think people get homosexuality confused with the sexual act? Because I'm heterosexual, it does not mean that I'm going to hit on every man that comes around, you know? I think people think because someone's homosexual, that doesn't mean they're going to act on it. That means their preferences, their feelings are. I don't think it always means a sexual act.
But the point is, if a person identifies himself or herself as gay or lesbian, and he or she chooses to be in a relationship and wants to have an intimate physical relationship, what does that mean in the context of the kinds of things we've been talking about, if marriage is the only place and we don't have a form for marriage to happen for that? What does that mean?
Some churches do have blessing of relationship ceremonies.
Some churches do.
Commitments are made. Some governmental bodies are moving more and more towards the recognition of a partner in a same-sex relationship. So that is happening in some places to some extent.
That's true that it's happening in congregations and in some cases judicatories. But in terms of national denominational structures, there haven't been any that have, in the United States, that have moved completely to that point yet. I don't think. I may be wrong about that. Yes.
Several weeks ago, the Minneapolis Star began change their method of publishing. They used to publish marriages. They came out and decided they would publish like people who are getting together, which they were saying in gay and lesbian situations, they would publish those people's names as well as the males and females who were getting married.
Mm-hmm.
There was a tremendous hue and cry from the public about what they were doing. Now, I'm not sure if they've stopped it or not, but they may have.
Okay.
So that says to me, society as a whole in that particular situation is not ready for that. And all they were doing was publishing it.
Okay. So we have the situation where we not only have singleness, but we also have those folks who may consider themselves to be part of a couple but don't have the option of marriage, who also struggle with sexuality issues and can't even choose what a single man and woman could choose if they wanted to be more in compliance with their faith tradition. Yes?
Well, society's definitely very homophobic. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. But I think that when it comes to a relationship, whether you're heterosexual or homosexual, you have to decide. I mean, there's that, like Dorsey, there's guilt on this. And I think each individual has to look at their situation, whether it be, like you said, the aged couple that's Social Security, or the divorced couple that has children, or the homosexual couple. And they have to look at their situation and decide, are they going to stay single or celibate out of guilt, or are they going to forget what the church says, which I think is why a lot of people are leaving the church, especially homosexuals. Or are they going to look at their own feelings and communicate these feelings with God and think, how does God feel about this? Not what did some people long ago in the church write down as being law, and therefore it's wrong. And then you're communicating with God, and it's how you feel. And if you know your relationship is based on love and sex, and that makes a big difference. And then I think you can enter into that relationship without feelings of guilt and knowing that it's okay with you, it's okay with God, and someday you'll get the chance to talk about it and see how God feels about it.
Okay, so that's one way of looking at it. What if someone really wants to be a part of their faith community and they really have wrestled with this, but you know, the faith community is saying, sorry, unless you comply with our rules, we really don't want to have you here. I mean, is that a dilemma that anybody ever struggles with?
Well, isn't that true in all cases? I mean, that's not just there. There's a lot of other areas in the church, too. You know what you say? Although this can't be...
I think this one is one that is particularly sensitive because we have this message that we're not supposed to talk about it, for one thing, you know. And so it's hard to, I mean, who do we talk about these things with if we want to struggle within our faith communities and come to some kind of resolution? Who do we talk to about these things?
The church has a very double standard on this. I've sat on synod boards and things like that. We've talked about some pastor who has come out of the closet, now what do we do with him? And the conclusion has been, it's all right for him to be a homosexual, but don't be one.
But don't act on it.
Exactly.
Yes.
I mean, it has no sense of sexuality whatsoever. The thought is only genital sex.
Yes.
And don't do that, and then you can stay in. But if you are not going to make the commitment to a celibate life, then you're out. You know, it's just, and just don't be a homosexual. It's all right to be one, but don't be, don't
okay.
express
and,
that.
And the same thing is true for a single adult clergy person who is heterosexual,
mm-hmm.
He or she will have to choose celibacy if he or she wants to remain single. So that it's, in that sense, it's true for both heterosexual and homosexual folk. Okay. But for the heterosexual person, there is always the option then, or the choice of a partnership, mm-hmm. and with the homosexual person, there is no choice or option. It's only one way to do things. What, was her hand back here? No. Okay.
There's one over here.
Oh. Where?
Yeah.
Okay.
I go to an Episcopal church, and there are gays and lesbians all over the place, and we don't talk about it, and nobody writes it down much. And whenever the church tries to put this into a little box and say what they ought to do or ought not to do, it never comes out to anybody's satisfaction. So what we do is we just love them. And it works really well. Mm-hmm. We have a couple men. One of them is, he was married and had a child. In fact, he had two children. And his daughter was retarded. And he's now probably 45, 50 probably. And this daughter had a child out of wedlock. She's mentally retarded, about 12 years old in her mind, and literally is about 17. And now there's a little granddaughter. And he and his significant other are raising this little granddaughter. And it's just the most wonderful thing for us in that congregation. We just love them. And that little girl, she's just, oh, it's wonderful. And they're doing a terrific job.
In some states, however, they would not be allowed to do that. It would be illegal.
Oh, if anybody tried to take that baby away from them, well, but the mother of the baby also still lives in that home. I mean, there's about 12 people living in that home, including what we think is the father of the baby. He's a street person. It's just, I mean, it's the most bizarre thing, and they have all kinds of mental problems because they can't deal with all this stuff. But the baby's doing okay, you know, and they're doing okay, those two guys. So, oh, it's complicated, I tell you.
What, in terms of the kind of guidelines you would want to see for sexuality and singleness, what would that be? Yes.
Well, I guess I have a question. Should the guidelines for sexuality be different at different ages? I mean, surely what you would teach or the advice that you would give to a teenager might be different than one that you would give to an adult or a divorced single person. I think what makes it hard for hard and fast rules that they just, you know, they just don't apply to everyone. And that's just a question I'm offering, you know, should the rule be different at different ages?
You're raising a really good question, because at different ages, there may be more or less vulnerability, and therefore more or less risk of exploitation. I think back here first, and then
I think to follow both of these last two comments is, should they be hard and fast, whether this has to do with age, or whether we might need firm fixed rules and boxes, and do we need to head in that direction? Does God want us to do that? Does he want us to have chapter 7, you know, all this sort of thing?
That's a really good question. Do we need rules, or should we be able to make our own kinds of guidelines as single adults?
Does it make sense to have guidelines in this area and the church to have no guidelines in most of the decision-making questions that we have to face? The church has no guidelines about greed and materialism and a lot of other things that are much more hurtful to my neighbor.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And that point has been made. We seem to be moving on, though. Our churches seem to be I don't know what word to use, stuck on moving in this direction of establishing pretty firm guidelines. And they will come up with a lot of reasons for that. I think that you have an excellent point.
I really think this is designed so that we can feel like we're active in our religion without really wrestling with the issues. I think it's a way to escape from Christianity.
How, expand on that a bit.
I
don't know what you mean by that.
I think the morality about sex.
Yes.
Sin equals sex.
Mm-hmm.
This simplistic approach makes people, particularly if they're married, because they can, no matter what, they're within the guidelines,
mm-hmm.
then they can be active Christians as long as they denounce those homosexuals and those people who are outside the guidelines. To me, it's Phariseeism. And I see popular Christianity in America as primarily Phariseeism. And I see that Jesus said 10 times as much about greed and materialism as he does about sex.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's
true. It wasn't an issue, because the guidelines were already firmly established and it wasn't an issue. It's just like when Luther was talking to Catholic Church, there were some things that weren't discussed because they were in agreement.
The ethic back in the time of Jesus was for men to be married and women were property. And so all of those guidelines, or whatever the few that there were designed to protect men's property.
Okay, even if we erase the tension with Jesus' teachings, we still have this question of what about all these ethical issues and decisions that we're making every day
that
affect my neighbor.
I agree with you. I'm not arguing.
This is where the church is concerned, so it won't have to deal with the tough questions.
I'm not arguing. I think, though, it has a lot to do with continued sexism, perhaps, because our decision makers are predominantly white males. Yeah, over here.
One of the things I noticed with the church is that it really doesn't trust us with our own faith. Mm-hmm. It comes right down to the point that we will teach you all kinds of things about your faith, and we'll tell you everything that Jesus said, and we'll explain all of this to you, but when it comes right down to it, there are things you must believe in. This is the structure that we have set up, and what you have developed out of it isn't as important as what the patriarchal structure has already set forth in front of you, which then kind of denies your own experience of God. So in a way, now you're struggling with whether you're really a Christian or not, because what would I believe? Most of this, some of this, none of this. And you go through this big mumbo jumbo of whether you are or you're not, and I do that all the time. Well, am I? Am I not? Well, I sometimes am, and sometimes not. You know? And it comes right down to that if the church really believed that we were really in touch with God, we would be released and allowed to have direct communication with our God and make those decisions between my God and myself. And I can decide with God what is right for me on these issues. And then you have to then be responsible for your own faith. You can't just sit back and wait for the church to come down with a social statement on sex or greed or politics or what we should be doing in Nicaragua or anywhere else in the world. You then become responsible and have to take that responsibility on and deal with it yourself. And then you begin to actually grow as a spiritual human being. And before you know it, you've got a great relationship with God, and you don't have any relationship with the church. That's what's happened in my life. I feel like I've grown away from the church, and I feel like I'm angry sometimes because I love the teaching and all of those things, but then this other stuff that they've decided for me, what I should then do with my faith, it doesn't make sense. Trust me.
I think that part of the issue is that We are living in an unprecedented time with the choice of being single and living as a single adult.
Right.
We have 50% of our population living as single adults. That's never happened before. And that's happened so quickly that our ethics haven't been able to keep up with our realities. And so we're moving past where we've had any experience. We don't know how to deal with these questions because they're really tough questions. And our church as an institution, churches as institutions, haven't had to struggle before with this kind of question of singleness because it hasn't existed for all kinds of reasons. Economic reasons, for one, the fact that people can, particularly women, can live and survive without being protected and supported by a man. Now that is relatively new in our society. It's relatively new, and therefore we are making different decisions. Both men and women are making different decisions, but particularly women, because there's a possibility to do that now. That means that marriage is not the only choice for women. And in the past, perhaps the main two choices would have been either marriage or some kind of communal living, such as going into being a nun or what's that called?
Death.
What?
Death.
You're big on death. But it's an unprecedented time in our history.